Why is the shopping cart always in the top right of the screen?
How do companies predict my purchases?
Why do prices end in 9?
Why do fast food companies use red and yellow in their logos?
Why do restaurants always have one expensive menu item?
Researchers, marketers, and very curious people seek the answers for how we make decisions and how we choose products. ClickSuasion finds the secrets that companies use and shares them with you.
Why do I feel better when I bought the last remaining airline ticket?
How do I make choices based on colors and fonts?
Welcome back to the ClickSuasion podcast. This is Michael Barbera. With us here today are two amazing people from ClickSuasion Labs. One's been with us for a year and the other's been with us for 2 years. However, this is the first time both of these amazing people have been on the ClickSuasion podcast. And let me introduce them both to you. First, we have Damian Sandoval. So here's three things we know about Damian. Damian, we know that you are a game developer. We know that you have been programming since the age of 12, and we know that you're a wannabe DJ. Damian, tell us something we do not know about you.
So on top of being a wannabe DJ, I'm also a very avid Dungeons & Dragons player. In fact, I am the former president of the UNLV Dungeons & Dragons Club. So whether it's making up fictional stories or creating interesting characters, that's one of my pastimes, is just creating these fantasy worlds.
Making up fictional stories and fantasy worlds is a nice way of saying that you're a good liar. So let's see. We also have Zachary Waddington. Zach, we know that you are an avid esports player. You also graduate from UNLV in a few days, so I'm dating this podcast. And we also know that you're an avid Detroit sports fan, although you're an Ohio State fan. So I'll let the listeners sort that part out. Zach, tell us something we do not know about you.
Growing up, I was always influenced by the types of music that my brothers would listen to. Very different types of music. You got rock and then rap, but rap I really like gravitated towards. And you know, at one point I actually thought, you know, it'd be kind of cool to be a rapper. I didn't go along that path, but you know, I still like to listen to a lot of different rap artists and draw inspiration, even though it's a different type of setting or scenario than the ones that I'm in. But it's still you know, just part of what I like.
If we start receiving requests for Zach raps, we'll let you know, and you're going to have to give us a track on the podcast. So,
yeah, I hope not.
Both of you amazing gentlemen recently attended AWS's reInvent conference in Las Vegas. And one of the topics that you came to me tell me about is you want to talk about how cloud computing is changing the tech industry.
When it comes to the future of online tech specifically, where, you know, we're storing websites, data, software, all on the internet for accessibility around the world, there are basically two routes to go about it. Well, two popular routes at the moment. There's the blockchain route, which is relying on peer-to-peer services. So that's basically relying on the people in a network around you and using their hardware and their computing power to access software, do the processes that you want to do. And then there's the cloud computing route, which is relying on a private enterprise to host your servers, your websites, your software. So previously, the model of keeping, or previously the model that software companies and tech companies would do is they would buy out data centers. So they would rent out servers or buy warehouses to place their servers in. And then they would have to hire IT personnel. They'd have to hire people to install the technology. So, you know, installing server racks, installing database software onto those servers. And it was a lot of maintenance on the company's end and a lot of money being funneled to operations and being able to maintain their infrastructure. And so what cloud computing is basically putting that workload on a private company that's selling infrastructure as a service. So Amazon Web Services is an example of that. There's also Microsoft Azure. I believe it's pronounced Azure. And then Google's cloud services. So you've got these three major companies that have servers and data centers all around the world and have the processing power to, you know, serve pages in an instant. And basically what they're doing is they're leasing these services out for a monthly cost. So let's say you have a new application idea and you plan that within the next 3 months, you're going to have 100 million users, which is a lot. But you're still in the planning phase. So you don't have the money to purchase a large data center, several data centers around the world, depending on where your geographic target audience is. You don't have the money to, at the moment, to buy that. Well, you can sign up with Amazon Web Services, Microsoft Azure, or any of these cloud services. And what they will do is a lot of them start with a free plan. And as your project grows, as your product grows, and as your consumers grow and your audience grows, it will, your services, so for example, your database, your servers will scale with that. And Amazon, Microsoft, Google, all of these cloud service companies handle all of the scaling for you. They handle the tech experts who add in new servers. They handle all of the database migrations. It's a great way to start small and end big without having to funnel a ton of money into purchasing your own infrastructure or purchasing technicians or IT people to help integrate this.
So what you're saying is that economically there is value in these models from Azure or AWS or similar alternatives for infrastructure as a service. Now, we know that these organizations are targeting the economic value where it's scalable. So you have 2 daily active users today, but you plan to have 100 million daily active users in 5 years. That would be an awesome number to achieve, by the way. So economically, it makes sense to scale with infrastructure as a service. In what way are these organizations targeting the buyer emotionally?
So as far as the way that it would be targeted emotionally, I would say that decreasing the workload that someone has to do for server management and so forth, even though that isn't directly saying, okay, this person's going to be happy from not having to do it, it does put, I would say, emotional strain having to allocate resources into server management and database management. Because it's a taxing process when you're managing all of that yourself. Say something does go wrong, rather than using a cloud platform, using an on-site platform would be, I guess, stressful in many cases if a problem does arise. Say you're installing a new database. If something does go wrong or a new server, whatever it be, something does go wrong and you need to revert to an older SKU or roll back the changes that you made, then there are, I would say it put emotional stress or something along the lines of that as far as having to go through that process. And cutting that out, while it may not eliminate stress from work in general, it would reduce stress related to that particular process when migrating or something along the lines of that.
So when looking at products and services and how they're targeting a specific segment of the population, it's the organization typically isn't selling the product. So for example, say you go to your favorite clothing website and you're looking at the website. If we were to put some human eye tracking glasses on you, more than likely you're not going to be looking at the clothing items, you're looking at the model. So when using human eye tracking glasses, the user looking at the website is showing more activity looking at the model's faces more so than the clothes. So in this scenario, what that company is selling is confidence. You're not selling clothing, you're selling confidence, because the buyer, even though they're buying the clothes, they're buying the garments and the retail items, they're buying based upon what the model looks like. So you're selling confidence. In this scenario, maybe it's not so much infrastructure as a service. Maybe it's infrastructure as a convenience. So I think the product being sold here is convenience, especially if you're a smaller organization. Let's say you're a boutique 20-person team. You may not have the financial resources or even the human capital to employ a large infrastructure. So you use a pre-built infrastructure as a service or infrastructure as a convenience. Now, talking about convenience, when there's exhibitors at AWS reInvent or any conference, they're looking for convenient ways to entice you to come over to their booth and, of course, gain your contact information. I know, Damien, you had some experience with this at AWS. What is it that you learned about how people are luring? How did people lure you over to their tables?
So they used a variety of techniques, some even stemming from behavioral science. One example that sticks with me and will probably stick with me the rest of my life would be a company called MongoDB, and they sell a database software. MongoDB is a large competitor to AWS, Microsoft Azure, because they provide a database solution that those companies supply as well. So what I thought was interesting is a big competitor to AWS, MongoDB, they buy one of the largest tables directly in front of the entrance to the expo. So as soon as you enter, you see the big glowing green signs of MongoDB. They've got a lounge area where people are sitting, working on their computers, having coffee. They had free coffee there. And as we walk up to, you know, the first large table that is in front of us, which is MongoDB, instead of handing out pins or stickers or magnets or anything else that a company would normally give out at an expo, they offered us free socks, green socks with MongoDB printed on it and kind of a circuit board design pattern on the socks. So I thought that stuck out to me because I'm walking around the expo for the rest of the day carrying a pair of socks.
Let's break that down. So one of the measurements we use here at the lab for understanding a consumer's willingness to trust or their loyalty for a specific brand is how likely is this person to wear or represent your brand on their body. So if you were to give out free t-shirts, you'd have gave out a free hoodie, and it has a company brand information on it. Where are you most likely to wear that outfit or that shirt or hoodie? Most people would say, oh, I wear it to sleep. So if you're wearing it to sleep, you're not showing anybody. And although you're giving yourself the brand impression every day, the company is not maximizing their return. Now, when you look at socks, right? Wearing funky socks or unique socks is a trend. So someone might be more likely or willing to wear the funky socks even if they don't trust or admire the brand as much on another scale. So this is a positive thing here too. And also looking at, let's talk about the coffee lounge that's set up here. So this is what we call bundling in behavioral science. So MongoDB, what they did was they took something that you love and they put it with something that you hate. So what do people actually hate and despise? It's being sold. It's being, hey, Damien, here's a business card. Come over to our booth. Here's a pin and a pen. Oh, whoop-de-doo. This is stuff people want to avoid. It's like when you walk into a retail store, Damien, how can I help you? I'm just looking. You may be ready to spend $1,000 in that store, but no matter what, you are just looking. So in bundling, you take something you love with something that people typically hate. And in this scenario, people despise or dislike booths at conferences because people are just looking to gain your contact information in exchange for whatever they're giving you. Now, in this situation, MongoDB built something that you love, an area, a lounge, a coffee shop where you could relax and get your work done. So this is a really good example of bundling that MongoDB has applied at AWS reInvent.
I agree. And one thing that definitely roped me and Zach in for good was they offered up a Nintendo Switch console. It's a video game console for free if you were to participate in a little game competition they had. Zach, did you want to discuss that a little more?
Yeah, so that is what initially drew us in. You know, before we actually approached the booth and sat down and participated in the activity, you know, they put that information out there. Yeah, if you just participate in this, it doesn't take too long, this activity, then you have a chance to win a Switch. And it's like, all right, not much to lose outside of, you know, 10 or 15 minutes of your time. Plus, you know, it the way that it was approached to us, it didn't seem bad. So their activity was to go ahead and use their platform, MongoDB's database platform, and kind of walk through these different steps. And, you know, there would be text and pictures and showing you, all right, these are the steps that you have to take to accomplish these different tasks for using this database. So the way that we got drawn in was, all right, yes, there's this free, potentially free video game system that you could get. But then, you know, you learn a lot when you actually go through using the actual software. And I think that was a very tactful move, kind of bringing people into an environment where they could learn their platform. Maybe some people otherwise would not have tried their software. And, you know, once you use it, you become familiar and you learn more on how the software is structured. And, okay, this isn't too bad. It's not too difficult to use. And then maybe you're more inclined to use that software in the future.
So they had us effectively demo their product by participating in a competition. So it was more of like a game. It was whoever could access the database the fastest and pull this information wins the Nintendo Switch, which is a $200, $300 console, by the way.
So let's see. So what you're saying here is that MongoDB, number one, understands their target audience. Number two, that both of you are easily persuaded to engage into a sales pitch. Beyond that, it's really good because what they did was they gamified the entire situation. Whereas most people are just want you to come over to the booth, they'll give you some free swag, or potentially some other goodies, where this organization, MongoDB, is giving you an experience. So they really changed the booth environment at conferences where they, one, gamify the sales process. They're giving you a positive experience, and they're also bundling one thing you dislike, such as a sales process, with something you love, potentially a coffee shop and a place for you to sit and answer emails.
Exactly. Yeah. I think you hit the nail right on the head. That's exactly what the experience is like. You know, I think having that approach would allow for them to bring in just more people to actually experience and test out their software. I think it was a great approach.
So what most people don't really know, this might be actually the world's worst kept secret, is that ClickSuasion Labs has been applying or integrating computer science with behavioral science, that we've been applying psychology to code and programming. And so that's why AWS and these topics are really important to us and should be important to the listeners' organization as well, because you really want to make your website tangible. Your website's more than just a flashing billboard or a digital billboard. It is the extension of your brand experience. And so you want to provide ways for people to leave with a positive experience, for them to learn and to continuously engage. And sometimes that includes artificial intelligence. So I know one of the things that both Zach and Damien came back from AWS with was some information about deep learning and artificial intelligence. Zach, what do you have to share with us?
Kind of going back to, I guess, automated processes, how they could cut down workload. When we were at Capcom's presentation, their session on how they explained some of the ways that they utilize cloud technologies, they went into also how they use machine learning and how that plays a process for cutting down, I guess you would say, operational overhead. So if I have someone dedicated to a task, in their example, something like level design. It could be a time-consuming process, and particularly for something like a puzzle game, which they showed for level design. All right, how could this puzzle be solved in X number of steps or N number of steps, or how could this be solved? Now there are different approaches. If a person were to go ahead and sit down and try to create a level for how this particular puzzle would be solved, it could be quite difficult and quite time consuming for, all right, how do I solve this puzzle in X number of steps? For a person to solve it, it's very difficult, but to even formulate how a puzzle would be created to service that requirement for being solved in a certain number of steps, it would be even more taxing or time consuming to formulate that. So they use machine learning and reinforcement learning to go ahead and kind of automate the process for creating levels. Maybe not entirely, but at least for creating a basis on designing levels, particularly for this puzzle game. So by doing this, you can have an algorithmic approach to, all right, this is how a puzzle level is created for this puzzle game. And then it could meet these different requirements. And you can make it as strenuous as you want. Say I want a puzzle to be able to be solved in 3 steps, or versus like instead of 5 steps, where it's more lenient for a player. They were also talking about just, I guess, difficulties and how you would have to approach designing a level for that. So this is very time consuming. It costs a lot of time and money to be able to formulate these levels, and by using machine learning and reinforcement learning, they're able to cut down the times and the costs for that. And then also they're able to work on making more levels and better design levels by doing this. So by taking an algorithmic approach where a program essentially is automated to making a level, it cuts down a lot of the operational overhead for creating a level. In this instance, it could be applied to other tasks within computer science or in other industries as well.
So I think the big takeaway from this is a lot of people see automation, AI, deep learning, machine learning. They see it a lot in hands-on industries. So, you know, people see automation as replacing the cashier with self-checkout or replacing the truck driver with the self-driving vehicle. What a lot of people don't realize is that AI is also affecting the software industry. You know, it's affecting business in a positive way. You know, it's cutting down costs and streamlining processes that are costly or cumbersome. So one of those would be like operations. So in the development life cycle, you've got your planning, your building, your release phase, and then you've got operations. And a lot of what AWS is doing is automating the operations process. That goes back to what I was saying about scaling servers for work, you know, for increased workload. All of that is automated with these cloud services.
So the automation part fits really well into the 3 things we do at the lab. And that's one, everything we do here has to be actionable, relevant, and sustainable. So the sustainability piece is really important. So looking back at the 3 topics we talked today, some of the takeaways are, number one, how cloud computing is changing the tech industry, which is really infrastructure as a convenience. Number two would be gamifying conference booths and providing more of an experience, maybe with bundling. And then lastly, the automation piece and how important it is to relevancy as well as sustainability going into the future. Damien and Zach, it's been absolutely phenomenal talking with you both. This is some great information that I think is actionable, relevant, and sustainable. And hopefully the listeners can apply this to their organizations and their campaigns almost immediately. Damien, if any of the listeners want to get in contact with you, how could they reach you?
Yes, they can reach me at my Clixuasion Labs email address, which is Damien, D-A-M-I-E-N, at clixuasion.com.
Awesome. And Zach, if the listeners want to harass you as well, how could they find you?
Yeah, likewise, you'd reach me at my Clixuasion email, Z-A-C-K at clixuasion.com. Yeah, I look forward to interacting with the viewers, or the listeners rather, hopefully discussing more. Thank you for the invite, by the way.
Awesome. This has been absolutely phenomenal. So for the listeners, go ahead and subscribe to the Clixuasion podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And from Clixuasion Labs, this is Michael Barbera for Behavioral Science News discussing AWS from Pinehurst, North Carolina.
Thanks for listening to Clixuasion. Subscribe to the podcast, read our research, and get in touch with us at clixuasion.com. You can also find us on Twitter with the handle at Clixuasion.